This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey, Heather, Rochelle, I don't know if you heard anything from Matt. I mean, it's like we're supposed to start recording like almost 15 minutes ago. I don't know where he is.
Yeah, I checked my text. I haven't seen anything from him. Maybe it's just traffic. You know, traffic's been really bad lately.
Yeah,
so
it could be, right.
He could be looking for parking. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not in a rush. I just want to see if anyone heard anything.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my God. Oh fuck.
Hey, guys. Sorry. Sorry I'm late.
Fuck. Someone just threw a knife at me, and then jeez. Matt appeared.
Oh, sorry. No,
what
yeah.
The fuck?
Sorry I'm late. I've just been really trying to figure out. I got these teleportation knives, and I've just been, like, trying to figure out how they work.
What? Hold on.
What the fuck?
You got these teleportation knives?
Yeah, I got these knives that when I throw them, I teleport to where the knife goes. So it took me a while to figure it out, but I'm like 15 minutes late. It took me like 15 minutes to like really try to like figure out how to get here. So it did eventually work, but I can only go to where the knife goes.
Fuck.
Jesus,
so,
don't
sorry, sorry. I'm not trying to like get you or anything. I just keep throwing the knife.
Whoa. Wherever you throw the knife, I am watching your corporeal form disappear for a moment and then reappear someplace else.
Look, you
that
don't have to explain it to me.
Shocking.
I'm doing it. I know. It hurts. It does not feel good at all. It's like really, really scary. It's not. And also, can I say it's not convenient? It's not a convenient way to travel. It actually really sucks.
Yeah, but maybe just lay down. You know, it's amazing. It could be a cool magic trick, but maybe just set them down for a second.
I'm not going to set them down. It sucks, but I'm going to use them.
Did you have to throw it? Couldn't you just like kick it across the room, like slide it on the floor and then go
to
work?
Why forgot. Do you have to throw those it famous at kicking Nick? Knives. Everyone kicks
no,
knives.
It's
an
not,
easy thing
I'm,
to do.
Just there's a crowded studio. There's a lot of people who work here. It's an open office concept.
No,
so, you know,
I know. Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't want to. I know. I
Rochelle
I
is in here.
Out.
I don't want to hurt her.
No, I don't want to hurt Rochelle.
I'm
freaked
bleeding.
Out.
I'm bleeding.
I freaked Marty out earlier. It was like really, really. Katie's upset.
You nicked Rochelle. Rochelle's bleeding.
I nicked Rochelle. You nicked Rochelle every time you're in the studio.
Okay, don't throw that back at me. That's cute, but let's come on. Serious.
I'm sorry. I don't like holding the threat of HR over your head, Matt, but I do think that this is an extremely dangerous mode of locomotion. I don't know that you should be. And also, why didn't you throw it near Nick? It seemed like you threw it straight at his throat when you came in.
I'm not really in control of my throwing yet, so the knife just kind of goes where it goes.
What does that mean? You're not in control of throwing?
I'm not good at throwing. I'm bad at throwing.
I think we should get into the record. I think we should talk about this after because I think it's gonna be a longer discussion, and we only have the studio for so long. I do need to get a drink because like I'm just like
I'll get it for you, buddy.
Fuck! Fucking shit! God!
Sorry, the can totally like got in the way of the knife and like the can just like there's like soda everywhere.
Matt, I'm begging you. You are 3 feet from the couch. Can you just walk back to the couch? You don't need to teleport over.
Okay, everyone else gets to, you know, play with their toys, right? Everyone gets to get a new car, drive the car. Everyone gets Apple Watch, counts their steps. I get some teleportation throwing knives, and I'm not allowed to use that. I guess fuck me, right? That sucks.
I don't even know what you're angry about. Like, those things
Heather has the
unrelated.
Apple Vision Pro, wears it all the time, gets to do all computer on her eyeballs and stuff. I get some knives that I throw. I'm not allowed. This sucks.
He is right. You do have the Apple Vision Pro.
Wait, you guys can tell that I'm wearing it? Because I thought it looked like my eyes.
No, it's super obvious. We watch Sean Bean die yet again and generally are confused as we watch animated feature film prequel Kingsglaive, Final Fantasy XV, this week on Get Played.
Welcome to Get Played, your one-stop show for good games, bad games, and every game in between. It's time to get played. I'm your host, Heather Ann Campbell, along with my fellow host, Nick Weiger.
That's me, Nick Weiger, and I'm here with our third host, Matt Abadaka.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the premier video game podcast. We used to talk about bad games, then we started talking about any games, and now we talk about
Bad movies?
Now we purposefully single out Matt Apodaca and subject him to something that he made a big deal about having not seen just a few weeks ago.
That's at least what we did this week.
Yes.
It's a Final Fantasy themed month of sorts. I mean, not really. It's light.
Yeah, not intentionally.
It's light Final Fantasy theming. It's not like we're doing like Final February or, you know,
Vanadil
March.
Not doing that because it is March.
No, I was trying to do a play. I followed it up with a pretty good Vanadil March is the name of the opening track from Final Fantasy XI, and that was what I followed it up with. But I needed to team myself
up. You think
up.
I knew that, Heather?
Look. If you keep saying stuff like that, Matt, you will know.
Okay,
stuff
great.
Like
Next
that.
Week, I have to talk. I have to play through the Final Fantasy MMO for PlayStation 2.
Yeah, the defunct thing. You find a fan server for Final Fantasy 11.
First off, it's not defunct. It's still being serviced and played by Square Enix.
Is that like true? That's wild.
It fucking is. They still release updates for Final Fantasy 11. That game is more than 20 years old. That's fandom. That's community.
I thought 11 was just, I just assumed, and whatever, I'm not plugged in on these things. I assumed 11 was just offline and they were all in on 14 now.
Nope. Playing both. Wow. And I think actually there's a thematic raid this month in Final Fantasy 14 that is Final Fantasy 11 themed, which is, that's weird.
That's fun.
I mean, it's 20 years ago. Anyway, we're talking this week about some more Final Fantasy stuff, but let's not get to that yet. Right, Nick?
That's right. We don't need to get to Final Fantasy 15 Kingsglaive right away. We'll have plenty of runway to talk about that in a second. But first, we should talk about video games in general, stuff that we are occupying our time with currently. It's time for What Are You Playing?
What are you playing? Hey, it's me, the Resident Evil Merchant. I'm here to ask you the question I ask every week. What are you playing?
Get someplace to be? Just really just sped through that.
Clock's ticking. Let's go. Come on.
I mean, you're paid by the hour, so I would think you would want to drag this out. But
wait,
if you want to get out of here quickly.
Okay. Hey, guys.
Yeah, have you been
doing?
Sending in invoices? Because I haven't seen an invoice.
No.
Okay.
First off, in order to send an invoice, you need to either have access to email or a printer. One of the two. I have neither.
Got it.
The cafe across the street where I usually hang out is kindly asked me to leave. Also, that coffee's expensive.
Yeah, you said this, the cafe where you usually hang out. My understanding is that you had been illegally squatting there.
Yeah, or I think there's a thing called frogging where you like live in the walls.
Oh, interesting. I wasn't sure if you were full on frogging. I thought you were just living in a storage space. Unless I'm mistaken about the business that was where that was the
little
case.
Column A, little column B.
So you are living in the walls part time.
Look, what I came to ask a question, and it's what are you playing?
Well, Resident Evil Merchant, thank you for teeing us up.
You're welcome.
I think that actually, though, you know, maybe you were kind of maybe directing this at me, but I kind of feel like you should start with Matt and Heather, because I know they've been playing the game of the moment.
Oh, okay. Maraburaga, Heather and Campbell, what are you playing?
Thanks, Resident Evil Merchant. I'll start this off by first mentioning that last week I texted you guys that I was doing something really exciting, and it was that I was in a freaking tattoo chair.
That's right.
And I got a freaking tattoo of a Keyblade from Kingdom Hearts 2, specifically. And
it's sick as hell.
It's called the Two
awesome.
Become One Blade. You get it for defeating Roxas, who is Sora's, like, other half. And
it's his, nobody?
It's his, like, nobody. Yeah, it's like a boss. It's a boss fight that you can do in, I think, Final Fantasy, Kingdom Hearts 2, the final cut specifically.
But you didn't go in there with be like, give me a Keyblade. You had a specific Keyblade in
mind.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. I sent that in, and the guy got to work and did some light work. They're very, very good. I wish I had the name of the shop in front of me. This guy I met did it.
Why that blade over the classic blade?
I thought about getting the classic blade, and it would have been a lot cheaper probably to do that. But it was, I don't know. There's something about, like, I just like the way this one looked.
It looks cool. And also the specificity of like, this is the specific Keyblade, I think, is like a mark of true fandom.
Yeah.
Look, man, that is awesome. It's on your lower leg.
It's on my lower leg, and it does have like a
well, that's where it starts. It goes all the way to his neck.
Yeah, it's a full length Keyblade. So it is getting a good chunk of my torso. But there was also like you know, like, do you get like the Oblivion Keyblade, which is also really cool. I just kind of like the I don't know, the look of the Two Become One. It also has like a sort of like small checker pattern on it, and it kind of has like a,
it's really cool,
sort of like kind of punk rock kind of feel to it. It's also the most blade looking of the Keyblades. A lot of them look like keys or like funky weird things. This one looks like a sword, kind of. That's also kind of why I wanted to get it.
I would say you're decently inked up. I'm not sure where you would what your tattoo count is at, or if you want to share that. But
six currently.
You get six currently. Like, at what point are you like, I'm a tattoo guy, or are you already there?
I don't consider myself a tattoo guy.
Got it.
No, I'm at a point now where, like, I wanted to get that for a long time. I have some other ones that are like less like. Like, I have this ghost right here that I got doing a podcast with our pal Jacob Waisaki.
Yeah.
And I got that just, like, for fun. And
it's a ghost
it was
with a
like
slice
funny.
Of pizza, and it is funny.
But, like, I'm at a spot now where, like, I think I could just get one and not really, like, have, like, a story or reason. Like,
sure.
Because I already have six.
Right.
If I had, like, three, I'd probably want them to be a little more, like, important.
Yeah.
But now that I have, like, six, I'm just kind of like, I'll just get a bunch. Like, it's like, I'll just have a lot. I don't know when I'll get another one, but you always want another one after you get one. But all that to say, I did that, and I've been playing a lot of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
I have been playing some Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I can't say a lot, because I've been working a lot. But
no, I've been working too.
It is,
just in case anybody.
We're all working. We're all working.
Okay.
A lot. If anyone
at
work
wasn't trying
hears
to
me,
be...
I was working as well.
Look, I'm just, you know, as listeners have pointed out, Heather's always busy. Heather's always busy. She's always talking about how busy she is. Well, yeah, I'm a little busy right now, and so I haven't put in
as much
time.
I think people saying that are busy little bees. Why don't you mind your business?
I like this voice you've established for our fans. This is good to have.
Well, no, our
Heather's
fans
always
sound...
We're always busy.
Our fans,
for one, are
normal.
Not complaining that Heather is busy.
Yeah.
It's the people that don't like the show that listen to it.
I think I said
which
listeners.
Every podcast needs. You got to have some people who listen to the show who don't like the show.
That's good. Yeah.
It's good for the soul. Some of that spice.
My mental health is certainly improved by this. That's good. What chapter are you in?
I'm still in chapter 2.
Okay.
I'm in Calm and taking my time because part of what I like about Final Fantasy games is just existing in them.
So sure,
like,
yeah.
I'm like, and I know that a lot of the assets in the game are just like probably random assets, but it's really hard for me not to like look at the paintings on the walls and stuff because mm-hmm. I'm like, somebody put this here. Like it is such a gorgeous game that it feels like I don't want to run through environments. Also, it's too funny to run through environments and it kind of ruins my immersion because like everything is kind of like loose. So if you like run yes. through like a cafe, you just knock the chairs all over the place.
The physics engine is really funny.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I've been taking my time playing some Queen's Blood, which I love. Whew, such a
People
good game.
Talking about Queen's Blood.
Nick, you're going to, once you start playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, you're going to get to the part where Queen's Blood is unlocked and then, knowing you, that's all you're going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is such a fucking
progress
good...
of the story is done at that point.
It is such a good game yeah. in this game. It is it's awesome. It is so much fun.
I've heard this been talked up. It's like the new Gwent. I got to try this fucking yeah. thing. Did you, Matt, which chapter are you in?
I'm in chapter 4.
Okay.
I'm about 12 hours in. I spent about 10 hours in chapter 2 doing every available side thing. There's these missions that you get with Chadley, the little guy. That little
I
guy.
Do like Chadley.
Yeah, no, you're Chadley as hell. You're Chadley coded for sure.
Think I'm a Chadley?
I think no. I have it reversed. Chadley is actually a Nick Weiger. Chadley is the most Weiger ass character in any video game ever. And he's like, hey, could you go walk around and get me some data? I love data. And so you go on these like intel missions for Chadley, and that's how like that's where like the open world part of the game comes in, where it has the same type of like thing that all open worlds have, where there's like a tower you have to ascend and you know activate the tower, like things like that. And then there's like other little missions along the way, but there's so many of them that I spent 10 hours doing all of them in chapter 2.
Yeah,
that's
and then
amazing.
I'm in chapter 4, and there's more now.
I don't know why you would. I mean, to each their own. But it seems like such a missed opportunity to get a role playing game that is as bespoke as Final Fantasy VII Rebirth and not do all of the bullshit. Like that's what you're
you
there
gotta
for.
You got to do the bullshit. Yeah. And also, I didn't get to do all the bullshit in Remake because I was not speeding through it, but I was like trying to get through it so I could get to Rebirth. And yeah. At a certain point in the latter part of Remake, I thought some of the, and I think this is a common complaint, some of the side missions and side quests were repetitive. A lot of them were like
sure.
fetch questy and stuff.
Right.
So far, lots of variety. And like, even if it's like, you know, if they run out and there's similar ones in each section, at least they're varied enough. And there's a lot of them that you're not feeling like you're doing the same thing, you know, every other mission. Whereas like in Remake, it wasn't paced as well in that way. But I've been really, really liking the missions in this. And then obviously the story is good. It's like it's really interesting yeah. what they've done so far. And I'm just happy to see all my guys and getting to like fight as what do you call it? As Red 13. Is really funny.
Yeah, how do you both like the combat? Is it kind of more of the same of Final Fantasy VII Remake? Are there any new mechanics you've noticed?
There are these new attacks. They're called like synergy attacks or something. And that's where you can, if you've used an ability enough times, you get these like other things where you can use these attacks with another character. So you have to both have them use abilities and charge up, get specific charges to then be able to use a synergy attack. And they're all really cool and interesting looking. And there's like new, like materia that I really like. Like there's like a fire and ice materia, not separate ones.
Mm.
Like they have separate ones still, but they have one that's like double and that you can, that equips both magic spells instead of just one, which I think is cool. And then you can get like, there's like, I think that materia in particular gives Cloud some extra abilities that are like you get like a fire blade attack or something. It's really, really, that stuff's great. I really love that. And then there's some other like spoiler things that I won't say, but I'm really liking the gameplay so far.
Wow.
There's been some online chatter about but to answer your first question, I like the combat in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth more than the combat in Final Fantasy XVI. So that's been a real pleasure. It's got, there's a lot you can do and I like it. And I also feel like on the highest difficulty level, there's some challenge to it. It's not impossible, but you know, I've had to Phoenix down somebody already while playing on this, getting my familiarity with the combat system. But, I think so. There's been some online chatter about how the game isn't selling like gangbusters. Like it's not like, you know, it's selling less copies than Final Fantasy VII Remake did in its first week. And I think that, you know, if you're making a trilogy of this game, there's going to be fewer people who buy the second one and fewer people that buy the third one, just because like everybody who buys the first one isn't necessarily going to buy the second one. Right.
Sure.
And the second one is, you can't just jump into it not knowing anything about Final Fantasy. You'd be fucking confused as hell. Like nothing would make sense. Like, who are these people? They're not given proper intros. Like, it's definitely a sequel. And it seems like, I know that it would have been financially impossible to do, but it seems like it would have benefited Square if they could have released all three parts all at once as a single monumental, gigantic game. It's too bad that they can't, because I don't want them to be punished for their efforts. That's my feeling.
It's really cool that they were just like, here's just a proper sequel, and the expectation is that you played the first game. It's not like here's a reset and then you can just sort of, everyone can kind of, you can play Spider-Man 2 without playing Spider-Man 1. Right. You're fine. You know, like there was nothing like that. It was just sort of,
what the fuck is going on with this guy?
Right.
Why is he jumping around like this? Was it like, he's
how
like,
he could
just jump anywhere. This isn't
so
New York that I know.
Yeah.
Dune 2 does the same thing.
Dune 2, yeah. You see Dune 2 without seeing Dune 1, you're going to be completely
Dune
lost.
Dune 2 is like, I really hope you saw this one.
There's
we're
no
not
fucking way to give you any fucking context.
We're going to start Lisan Al Gaib, and you better know what the fuck we're
gonna,
talking about.
We're going to throw new shit at you immediately.
And it's more confusing. I'm in favor of that 100%.
I love it. Yeah, I think it's really cool. I don't know. That's an interesting challenge to figure out how to market this thing. And I think obviously a lot of the hype for a remake was probably people who love Final Fantasy VII maybe played it, maybe even bounced off of it, but were just excited to like, oh my God, I loved that game when I was younger and I'm excited to revisit it. Or, you know, I want to see what all the hype was about and then find out that it's not for them. So yeah, if it's limited only to people who made their way through the bulk of or all of Final Fantasy VII Remake, that's a pretty limited section of the market.
I know, they will do this eventually. After the third one comes out and sells, you know, whatever the half-life of sales will be for that game compared to this one, they will do a bundle that'll be like Final Fantasy VII Remake, you know, complete.
Yeah.
And it'll be all of it in one.
Mega Mix 2.8 or whatever the fuck's dumb subtitle they'll give it.
And then you can unlock Sora and Goofy as well. but they'll do it all as one thing as the first, you know, like as the original was three discs too, right? Yeah. But the thing that I'm loving about this part so far, not very far into it, obviously, is that when I was playing Final Fantasy VII just a couple months ago, the original, and I'm doing all the stuff in Midgar, and I kind of thought that this was kind of it. I thought there wasn't a whole... I didn't know there was an overworld, for example. I didn't know that the whole game like really widens up. We're in the part of the game where I was like, oh, wait, there's more? And I'm just really excited to be in this part because it feels like that... It feels like now we're playing the game. Like now, this game started now. Midgar's way in the rear view. That's over. Now we're in Calm. Now we're in Junon. Now we're going to all sorts of other places. And I'm just excited to be in this part of the game. It's really exciting stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's gorgeous. Seconded. It somehow is nicer. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really
Sephiroth's
gorgeous.
Sephiroth's hair is beautiful. I love it.
Yeah. The synergy attack between Cloud and Sephiroth is like some of the most realistic sex I've ever seen in a game.
Well, I'm glad it's hitting for both of you. I'm excited to hear about the rest of your playthrough, because I think it is going to be some time before I get into it. Any more thoughts on Final Fantasy VII Rebirth?
No. I mean, it plays beautifully on the portal. I don't know if you've done this on the portal yet, Heather, but give it a spin on the portal.
Oh, okay. I will.
It's wonderful.
I'll talk a little bit about what I'm playing. I'm gonna say one thing about Baldur's Gate 3, and then I will not talk about it again until I finish this next playthrough. So I'm just I don't want to barrage people with Baldur's Gate 3 each and every week. We're gonna move on from that for this segment. Okay. But I am gonna say one thing real quick.
If you don't want to hear this, skip ahead 1 hour.
I'm doing a Baldur's Gate 3 Honor Mode Dark Urge playthrough. I want to talk about one thing, which is the actor who gives the monologue that tells you about what the Dark Urge's backstory is. His name is Neil Roberts. There's actually a great Polygon piece about him, and it just sort of talks about his lengthy career, you know, in theater, on stage, in radio, and now in TV and film and video games. And he also voices, you know, there's all these character voices. He voices Tav 5, which is one of might have used it for one of your playthroughs. I mean, it's one of the voices that is just for the player character that you can choose from, one of the six options. But he also does the voice of the Dark Urge origin character intro. And can we play this real quick, Rochelle? Because if you just want to hear someone just absolutely fucking crush a monologue, listen to this real quick.
My rancid blood whispers to me, kill, kill, and kill again. My ruined body yearns to wreak death in this world. And when this foul urge calls, it possesses my whole being. Injured beyond repair, I know nothing besides this. I must resist the dark urge, lest it consume my mind. I must discover who I was and what happened to me before my twitching knife hand writes a tragedy in blood.
Fuck yeah, this rocks. I'm like watching this like it's real.
Yeah.
Like this is so good.
That poor dragonborn.
Yeah.
Yeah, that absolutely fucking rocks. It's so good.
Why is he going to fight it? It sounds like it's okay.
Heather.
Let it happen.
That's a role-playing option if you're the Dark Urge. So, you know, I'll talk about it, but not today. Instead, I want to talk about Balatro.
Wow.
Which you were talking earlier about Queen's Blood. Well, this is a full-fledged deck-building poker roguelike that was developed by Local Thunk, who I think is a solo dev, though I'm not certain on that. It was released on February 20th. It is on everything. It apparently plays awesome on Steam Deck, and I assume it would play well on Switch as well, because it's not something that's particularly technically demanding. But this game is so well designed. It is one of those things where, and I mean this as a compliment, it is so like brilliantly simple.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that there have been a lot of deck building games, there have been a lot of card games that invent their own sets of cards, their own decks, their own rules. This one uses the established cards of poker and the established poker hands and is able to build a full-fledged roguelike out of that. So the way it works is And, you know, a lot of this has been kind of burning up the Steam charts, and a lot of people are playing this game. So I assume some of our listeners have spent some time with this, and it immediately got its hooks in me. Basically, you are playing poker hands against a series of opponents, although you're not actually competing against their hands. You're just trying to form a series of hands to accumulate additional points, and then that gets converted into currency if you're able to survive that round. So chips is the currency. So you will have you will form like three of a kind, or you will form a full house, or you'll form a straight, and you'll get a certain amount of points for it. However, there are also joker cards that you can acquire, which modify how decks work. So for instance, there's a joker you can get that makes it so that you can form a flush or a straight out of four cards instead of five cards, which just gives you a lot more options in terms of how you're forming hands. It makes it a lot easier to form a flush or a straight and subsequently collect the points for it. You'll get ones that maybe like double the value of face cards and just make certain hands, pay out a little bit more, add multipliers. And, you know, if you eventually get the right combination of things that add chips to each of your payouts that multiply those by a certain multiplier, you can eventually just get like all these chips that allow you to advance and complete your runs. There are also things like tarot cards that or planet cards or spectral cards that all affect the deck in different ways. For instance, you know, you might get a card that allows you to turn every card in your hand into a seven of diamonds, and they just stay the seven of diamonds for a while. Or another card that makes it so that you can thin out your deck a little bit, and you can remove like three cards, so all of a sudden you're playing with 49 cards instead of 52 cards, and makes it a little bit easier to pull powerful cards or cards that go towards your build. In fact, the first time I finished a run, it was with a flush build where it was designed towards getting flushes, which I, and from what I've read, this is like a pretty common way people start to wrap their heads around how the game works. And so I just thinned out my deck a bunch by removing like basically all of the spades and most of the clubs. So I just had two suits that I was working with in order to be able to form flush hands. And it also is, all this is matched with a hypnotic audio visual style that I think some people, you know, you might want to try it out first or watch some video of it if you're someone who's prone to motion sickness, because it does have like the sort of oscillating background that apparently some people have had bad responses to. I find it very, I find it very soothing, but it is, you know, it could potentially be overstimulating for you, but it almost feels like it's designed to be played on mute. There's basically one track that goes throughout. The sound design is pretty simple, pretty minimal. I find it charming and pleasing, but it almost feels like it's something that this is, hey, you might be playing it while you're listening to this podcast right now. So I really, really enjoyed this game. I really cannot recommend it enough to someone who's just looking for like a quick to play game that you could potentially play for a while. I just think it's an absolute hoot. I thought I'd do this real quick, just so we can talk through my journey with this game, which happened partly via our text thread. Friday, 9:25 p.m. Oh man, this indie card game is Balatro is incredible. Matt, you'd love this. Saturday, 10:10 a.m. So about 12 hours later. I've played 7 hours of Balatro. It's rad. It's exactly for me. I love it.
I'm gonna have to check it out. I'm looking at it right now on Steam. It looks awesome.
I think if you know just like the rules of poker, you'll be set. I would not be intimidated by it. It's like, well, I don't know how to play Texas Hold'em, or I don't understand, you know, because it's not really like that. You're not playing against opponents. You're not worrying about anteing or the river or concepts like that. It's pretty much just like forming a hand out of the cards that are available to you out of a certain pool of cards. And also you have larger hand sizes than you would in poker. You're dealing, I think, with 8 to 10 cards, very exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And you can also get jokers or tarot cards that expand the number of cards you can have in your hand,
That's
which is
really
another
cool.
way to find more options for winning hands. It's a very satisfying design. And I'm just really impressed by what they put together. Awesome game.
And you're playing it on Steam?
I'm playing it on PC, yeah.
Okay.
But it's on everything.
Yeah. I've fantasized about being like a poker guy and like having made some money doing poker.
Right.
And like that's what a life that would be. Seems like it might be kind of fun.
Yeah, you'd have to be.
There's a dark side, of course.
I think if one of us, even though I'm the most into card games, I think if the one of us who would be, it could be a poker pro would be Heather.
Oh, yeah.
Just because I think the mental game of it, you'd be extremely good at.
I used to play a lot of neighborhood games of poker and really enjoyed it. Like there was a solid few years of my life where I was like super into money games of poker. And while I was not extraordinary at it, I was also not bad at it. Like won a few, lost a few. It was decent.
Yeah.
It was fun times.
I know some people that have done this that have like, where I've like wondered, I wonder what they do for work. And then I found out that they like at an earlier point in their life won a good sum of money playing cards. And I'm like, oh, that's what it is.
Shall we talk about this movie?
Let's, yeah.
Rewind it back to the days of chillaxing on the beach and all-day fun with Spring Break on DraftKings Casino. Play exclusive games like Fan Fave Rocket. The excitement is endless, the vibes are right, and the cash prizes could be huge. New players, start playing with just $5 and get $100 back instantly in casino credits. Download the app and use code GETPLAYED to book your one-way ticket to fun with DraftKings Casino. The crown is yours! Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. 21 plus. Physically present in Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia only. Void in Ontario. Eligibility and other restrictions apply. One per opted-in new customer. $5 wager required. Max $100 in casino credits awarded, which require one-time playthrough within 168 hours. See terms at casino.draftkings.com/promos. Restrictions apply. Remember when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported the parents back to their home countries while keeping the kids in the United States? Well, believe it or not, there are hundreds of families who have still not yet been reunified.
Although we as a community may feel hopeless at times, I recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
They've reunified over 100 refugee families ripped apart by Trump's zero-tolerance policy. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family to find legal representation, housing, and counseling that they need in order to heal and get on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like me and believe that all families belong together, then join me in supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website at alotrolado.org/volunteer.
Final Fantasy XV Kingsglaive is the film, or is it Kingsglaive Final Fantasy XV? I forget what order the
Kingsglaive Final
is.
Fantasy XV. I'd
That's
like to start
is.
Us off with a review.
Please do.
This is from the New York Times, and it's a very short review. It's only a few paragraphs long, so I'm going to read the entire review. And I'm also going to highlight up front that it seems to have been written by the only journalist who is on staff from the world of Final Fantasy, and that's because of their name. All right, Final Fantasy 15, Kingsglaive. There's a very real possibility that watching Kingsglaive could result in brain addlement. At least... That's what it might feel like if you've managed to resist the lure of the long-running, rampantly successful Final Fantasy video game franchise. Suffice to say, this spinoff from the story of a magical kingdom besieged by an evil empire is too ludicrous for words. Even so, no movie, again, New York Times, no movie this welcoming to silly hats deserves our complete condemnation. Apparently rating Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, and Dune, parentheses, sandworms? The writer and director, Takashi Nozoe, whips up a pop culture pastiche that leaps from modern cities to medieval castles, from paved roads to alien moonscapes with head-spinning randomness. But when characters are wedged in the uncanny valley between live action and computer animation, their ability to rescue an incoherent plot is necessarily limited. Making matters worse, the voice work, notably from Aaron Paul, Sean Beam, and Lena Headey, is atrocious. But then so might yours be if called upon to bark wooden dialogue and names that seem concocted by a desperate Scrabble player who's run out of vowels. I was devastated to learn, for instance, that the oft-mentioned empire was called Niflheim and not, as everyone seemed to be saying, Nippleheim. Don't judge. With a project this misbegotten, we grab our amusement where we can. By, this article was written by Jeanette Katsoulis.
Wow. That made me like this movie because I'm just like so annoyed by that takedown. I think a lot of it just seems to come from not being familiar with this type of, maybe just anime or video games or just Final Fantasies in general. I don't know.
Are there sandworms in this?
I was trying to think as I heard that. I was like, is there a sandworm?
There's like a big tentacle thing, like a big like octopus type thing.
That's
I don't know.
Like, that's not a sandworm at all. And the fight takes place in the sky.
Yeah. There's not a lot of sand in the movie, really, if we're thinking about it. There's like, I mean.
Also, what
Nick and I have
silly...
seen Dune 2. There's a lot of sand
A lot of
that.
Sand there. Now, this Anakin Skywalker will like this movie a lot more.
Yeah, almost
what
no
silly
sand.
Silly hats. Is she talking about like
there are
armor?
Some silly hats.
There was the pinwheel on it. There was a dunce cap. There was like the big Pharrell hat.
Who's that? Look, I can't track any of these character names, but there's the one nefarious guy who's got kind of a funny hat.
Oh, that like Johnny Depp ass.
Yeah,
guy?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, great.
Look, I did not like this movie. I was confused by it, but I do like the visual invention. I do like the aesthetic. I do like the world. And I didn't think the voice acting was atrocious. I think maybe some of these actors were like in a booth by themselves, unclear on what they were saying to who.
Yes.
Because it's so dense with kind of with made up words. I don't know. That did not strike me watching the English version as like a huge weak spot of the movie.
No. And to this writer's point, you would also do a bad job if you had to say some of the things they had to say. Some of the dialogue was so bad.
Right.
And like, I hate to
maybe more of a script issue
belabor that point of it. But like, there was not a second in this movie where I knew what was going on. I was like very confused by it the whole time. Almost like it was inscrutable to me. And I really, really, I did at one point, I will admit this.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, I did fall asleep for 10 minutes and I did not go back because I was like, it's not going to help me.
I watched all of it. I was locked in. But I want to take a step back for a second because you and I, as we said, did not play Final Fantasy 15. Heather, you did play you love Final Fantasy 15.
I love it, but that's not this movie is the prequel. You're supposed to watch this first and then play the game. So, like, there's nothing in this movie that this is the introduction to the world and, frankly, is kind of a necessary introduction because the game sort of starts with the post-credit sequence, which was just taken straight from the game. Like, it's literally game graphics. The post-credit sequence of Kingsglaive is the beginning of the game. So this is the first media you are supposed to consume when starting on your Final Fantasy 15 journey. And I like this movie better than Advent Children.
That's interesting. I disagree, but I think if I was more familiar with the world, I might have a similar feeling.
And I don't think that this is necessarily a great metric for whether or not something is a good movie, right? I do just want to point out that Final Fantasy VII Advent Children has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 50%, and King's Glaive Final Fantasy XV has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 12%.
What's the fan reaction there? Because I think that was probably skewed by critics who are stodgy critics who are maybe a little bit baffled by what they're looking at.
Yeah, like the New York Times guy who's got a, or woman who has to review
the failing New York Times doesn't know what to do with Kingsglaive. Let's see, Kingsglaive Final Fantasy.
Kingsglaive is 69% audience score.
Yeah, so fans are probably probably overrating it. I think it act as a film, it probably is somewhere kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
Not to sound too third way here. I you know, this is the thing. It's, if this is intended as a, like, hey, let's have you take some steps down into the shallow end of the pool and get acclimated to the water before we plunge you into the deep end of the gameplay of Final Fantasy 15, I don't think it succeeds at that. Because I think I watched this movie and felt like I knew next to nothing about what this world was and what the rules were and who the characters were and what I should even be paying attention to.
There was like a couple things where I was just like, okay, so wait, they dress and talk like this, like sort of like old, like Game of Thrones style, like clothes and talking. But then they went outside and there's like normal cars.
That I love. I'll just say this. I love that. That is my favorite thing about this, is that how everything is so anachronistic. It's like we got a knight with in shining armor, and then we've got a guy driving like a Chevy Tahoe, and then we've got a fucking laser gun. Like all these things are coexisting. I think that is awesome. I love that.
I agree.
That just nonsense.
It's
pastiche.
An interesting stylistic choice, but it added to my sort of, where am I? Like, what am I watching here? But it looks, the thing about the movie too is that it does look good.
It looks awesome.
I wish more movies looked
incredible.
Like
incredible.
Yeah.
Here's okay, look, guys, I know that I'm coming from the Final Fantasy 15 house here, but my question is, what is confusing about it? It's a really simple story. There's a city with a king, and the king being alive is what makes magic possible in the city. There's an empire on the outside of this city. And the empire has taken over almost everywhere. And the empire wants that power. So they set up a sort of a clandestine mission to infiltrate the city under the guise of peace and then kill the king. Like, that's really simple.
You get that in broad strokes. But I think a big part of it is, like, it's unclear what the stakes are. It's unclear, you know, who is who exactly. For a large part of it, I think it's even unclear who the lead is. Like, I think some of it is just like, yeah, I overall got the broader narrative, but I think just the way the story is constructed, the information is doled out a little bit incongruently, and so it becomes a little bit hard to follow. I think also just because there is so much dizzying action, it starts to feel like a style over substance sort of thing. Of like, you know, let's take a moment to breathe here and just sort of like really start to grasp what's going on. But, you know, it's not indecipherable. It's just like I think another part of it is that because there's so much vocabulary being thrown at you, you're trying to track all of that. And for instance, to use Dune Part 2 as a counterpoint, they, I think, did a good job of paring down the nonsense to the essentials. I'm saying nonsense affectionately.
Yes.
Paring down the invented words and the lore to the essentials, so that you kind of you could comprehend it a little bit more. But I don't know. That's the challenge of making something like this, and also, that's also the challenge of making something like this and then localizing it. You know, it's tough. I do give them credit for just like making something that's so visually arresting.
I'm floored, guys. I thought you guys were going to like this. I thought you were going
to
be
like... There's no way you thought we were going to like this. That is a premise I absolutely reject. That is impossible.
I thought there was not there was a serious non-zero chance that after this, Apodaca, especially since this is Tetsuo Nomura, Kingdom Hearts, like this is like his, it was at one point his baby, and this idea that you would mash up, you know, a modern setting with like fantasy elements is so much this dude's jam. I thought there was, and you've got the tattoo. I was like, Apodaca's going to come in and he's going to be like, guys, I loved Kingsglaive and I want to play Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah, how do you think I feel here, sitting here questioning my God? Like, it feels bad.
Also, the trailer for Kingdom Hearts 4 is clearly Tetsuo Nomura being like, they took Final Fantasy 15 away from me. I'm going to try again. Because it's Sora running down, like, the same streets.
Look. It's...
They have a car in this that they made.
I love the car.
The car, I think it's cool. A beautiful
world. The car
world.
Is good. It's an Audi, right?
Yeah, it's an Audi, and they made one in the real world. Here for us, they made the car. I here's the things I love, and I feel nuts now because I was like, I was sure that we were going to have this kind of like, oh, and when he does this, that's kind of cool. Oh, and when that happens, that's cool. And now I'm like, guys, you didn't like?
My favorite part was when Lunafreya, the Oracle, basically jumps out of the flying car like to kill herself, and Aaron Paul as Nyx goes, oh, come on.
Yeah, there's a lot of like, well, that happened tier quips. Like there's a lot of the stuff is
ample
use of cliches.
I think that stuff, if I had to timestamp it, is from this time, right?
Sure, yeah.
Like this is like these are like the first instances of that. But I liked when the Oracle almost killed herself, and then he was annoyed that she was trying to do that. But I also like the teleportation knives.
Yeah,
those were cool.
That's cool.
And when the big guys at the end, they're also throwing their weapons. And in order to teleport, like, I like that. Okay, audience, if you are unfamiliar with Kingsglaive, let me do my best attempt to summarize. We start 10 years before the events of the movie, when Niflheim, the terrible empire, attacks the kingdom of Tenebra, the king and his family and the queen of Tenebra are all gathered for like a hangout. And the queen of Tenebra is killed. And the king of Lucius, which is our city, has to leave. And they abandon this young princess. And who knows if she's safe. But then 10 years later, Niflheim is engaged in a near constant war with Lucius. And there is a group of knights called the Kingsglaive who are out on the battlefield trying to fight all of the things that the evil empire can throw at the kingdom of Lucius. And they throw behemoths, they throw demons, they throw monsters. And the Kingsglaive use magic and weaponry to fight them off. Suddenly, the empire wants a peace treaty. They're like, this is ridiculous. Certainly, the kingdom of Lucius would like a peace with our fair Niflheim. There's like a cartoonishly bad guy who comes in and you're like, oh, don't trust this dude, this Johnny Depp looking guy.
Yeah, this like fancy lad bad guy.
And the king is like, okay, I'll agree to meet. And the emperor is going to meet the king and they're going to sign a peace treaty. But the empire has one caveat, which is that the prince of Lucius must marry the princess of Tenebra to create this, treaties. You know, like when all that kingdom stuff happens in like old times, like, oh, we're going to solidify this in blood. So the Kingsglaive is prepping for this peace treaty when they find out that the princess has been kidnapped by elements of the Empire. And they're like, oh no, we gotta go. We gotta go save the princess because the Empire's fucking with us. They're not actually here to create a peace. But that action of kidnapping the princess is a ruse to get all of the knights out of the city so that the king is exposed when it is time to invade. So the knights are on the outside saving the princess, and the king is attacked by Niflheim, and he gets killed, and he has one special ring that gives him all his power, and the princess takes that ring, and she's like, nobody can use the ring except the king. And our main dude from the Kingsglaive is like, let me try using it once. And he puts it on and he speaks to the kings of old. And the kings of old are like, Nyx, because that's his name. If you use this power, you'll have to forfeit your life. And Nyx is like, okay, I'll do it. And he fights Niflheim on his own, manages to let the princess escape to safety. And then he dies. And that's this. That's the whole movie.
Now I get it.
Fuck, god damn it.
No, here's the thing. You did a great job of explaining it. I don't think the movie does a good job of explaining itself. And I think that it looks amazing, as we've said a few times, and it has some really awesome sequences, a lot of cool visual ideas and conceptual ideas. But you know what it kind of feels like? It's like if you're watching The Matrix, but they cut out the scene where Morpheus takes Neo into the field of white and explains what the Matrix is and how it works and teaches him Kung Fu and everything. And it's just like, you kind of have like this 10 minute, decompression period where you're just being explained how everything works. And I never really understood even the status of these various characters, what the Kingsglaive was in particular. And I understand that a lot of this stuff is like lore that you can decipher or that you can find from other sources. And a lot of times there's an expectation, especially with video game stuff, that you will look at, you won't just look at this one text, but you'll look at a bunch of different things and piece these things together on your own. But I just was generally lost with a lot of it, despite liking how it looks. And, another example is the Mission Impossible movie without the slideshow or PowerPoint presentation where they explain what the mission is, who the bad guy is, and what you need to do to eliminate them. Just give me some context for what everything is. I do want to shout out a couple of actors. First off, we should shout out past guest, our buddy Ray Chase, who does appear in that post-credit sequence as Noctis.
That's right.
So it's good to see and hear Ray in there. But also I want to shout out Neil Newbon, who is the voice of Nyx is Aaron Paul. Neil Newbon plays Petra Fortis, who's another character who I can't picture right now, but I'm sure if I saw, I'd know who that was. But he is also the body of Aaron Paul's character. So he did the motion capture.
Oh, wow.
And Neil Newbon is, of course, the performer who gave us Astarion in Baldur's Gate 3.
Wow. Okay.
Adding a lot of juice to this.
A lot of juice.
Yeah.
And it needed the...
I feel...
It was Alpha fucking Daka, thirsty as hell.
I feel like... Because you're on your... You got your laptop open, and I feel like you're drafting an email where you're firing me. That's what it feels like.
No, it's actually my resignation. Look... I watched this. I maybe didn't think I was going to like it because it didn't seem good. And I was really, really trying, even though, like I did say, I did fall asleep for 10 minutes. I don't think I missed anything in the 10 minutes that would have helped me lock in with this thing. But it's not, look, I'm going to tell you right now, Heather, this isn't going to stop me from eventually playing Final Fantasy 15. I am going to do it still.
No, it did. I think of it as if this exists partly as marketing material for Final Fantasy 15, the game. It succeeded for me on that level because I was like, it would be awesome to play this.
Yes.
And like you were saying, the aesthetic is really cool. And just the world that they've built is really cool and feels like a fun thing to live in. And then the obviously the thing is just the post-credit scene is just pulled directly from the game. And that to me was like, oh, yeah, I want to be on a road trip with my bros.
This does also sort of like bring the thing like have I heard this complaint before that like this is my complaint about the Spirits Within that magic didn't seem like it was part of it at all. And like that is like such a big part of Final Fantasy, yeah. like in general, just like magic and like weird kind of stuff. This at least has that. So like
a lot of magic, no shortage of magic.
If I had to rank the Final Fantasy movies I've seen, it's Advent Children way at the top now. And that sounds crazy considering the conversation we had about it a few weeks ago. That is number one with the bullet, right? That is basically best picture. Then go all the way down to Kingsglaive. Kingsglaive is there. And then further still is The Spirits Within.
Interesting. I feel like I like Spirits Within more than this movie.
Wow.
But I'm not sure. I think Spirits Within is pretty rough. And this does look a lot better.
I think the way Spirits Within
looks...
It's
a better constructed movie, I feel.
It's a better constructed movie, but it's less Final Fantasy to me, and that's why I'm rating it so poorly.
As a Final Fantasy movie, it absolutely fails. That's a great point, yeah.
But because at least this has, like, magic and, like, old guys doing, like, weird magic stuff in it. And, like, I like the way the magic looks. It looks
the magic
tactile.
Looks fucking awesome.
Yeah, it looks computerized. Like, it looks, I don't know, it looks like technology, but also magic somehow. And I don't know, that's not a good way to explain what I mean. But if you've seen it and you know what I'm talking about, maybe you agree.
I think this is, I think I maybe just figured it out for me at least. Because I have a minimal understanding of Japanese. So if I put this movie on in Japanese without English subtitles, I think I would like it more. Because I would be like, you know what? I can't follow that thing, but this thing at all, but that's okay. Yeah. I can pick up every 30th word. And then beyond that, I'm just baking in the visuals. But you know what? This looks so cool that I think I like it. But actually trying to follow it in English, I'm just like, man, I'm lost here.
Yeah. And this is also this is a zone for me that I don't love. In general, because look, I don't like to be a hater.
No, I don't like to be a hater.
I don't like to be a hater. I like my letterbox.
No one here is trying to be a hater.
My letter, yeah, I'm not trying. It's happening. I'm not trying to do it. my letterbox is so annoying to most people because I give a lot of movies 5 stars because I just like going. I just like having a blast watching a movie. And so if I liked it at all, I'm like, well, that was an easy 5 stars for me. I had a blast. This, I gave 1.5 stars on Letterboxd.
Wow.
That's a damning review. Also, I have to point out one of my favorite things that was making me laugh when I was watching the movie is that one of the characters is named Regis, and I just kept thinking it would be so funny if it was Regis Philbin.
It's really fun. That's like the king. That's Sean Bean's character's named Regis.
Nobody else is named Regis.
They say Regis so many times in the movie. Imagine, it's the kind of thing maybe in the localization make him like Rebus or something.
Yeah, that's like more kingly too. Yeah. Like Regis. I'm just thinking he's gonna say this Final Fantasy's out of control.
But Regis
is
means
that your Final Fantasy?
Wait, who knew that Weiger had a Regis on lock? That was great. That was so good. Wow, the movie just got an extra star.
Regis is I think it's a Latin name that means king, so it's like it's
that would make sense. Regal.
I think it's
king Lucius. Fucking sucks. It's just such a funny, I don't know, like there's only one famous guy named Regis.
Yeah,
so it just occupied my mind the entire, and this is something that I think is worth mentioning, hour and 55 minutes. Somehow, the longest movie I've ever seen in my life. This movie was so long to watch. It felt like I was watching it for my entire life.
Yeah. No, it feels as long as Dune Part 2, and it's 1 hour shorter.
Yeah. And Dune 2 doesn't feel long at all,
actually. Absolutely does not.
I could have sat there for another hour.
But that's just a whole thing of just, like, pacing and, you know, that makes something feel like it's the duration that it is or not, it isn't.
But another positive I'll say is that one of the things I love about Final Fantasy, and particularly in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth right now, is that there is sort of like modern stuff in it, but then you see like creatures that don't belong there. And yeah. I like that.
I love
that. That's always good. That's an A+ to me.
That's what this has a lot of. And I think
a car and a creature.
I think that's great.
Love that.
Stuff that doesn't go together, but then here it is side by side.
Because in the creatures, like that big octopus thing that we were talking about earlier, I was like, I wish this came a little sooner. Because this is cool. This is great. I love this. I love how that looks.
Yeah.
I don't like what anyone's saying when it's happening. Everything that everyone was saying was crazy. But I liked how it looked. The tentacles looked all wet and gross.
Yeah.
Yuck.
The movie was written by Kazushige Nojima, which he wrote Final Fantasy VII, Advent Children, Kingdom Hearts. He also wrote Final Fantasy X or 10. Like he is like their main writer who wrote this. So I'm wondering if the localization actually is kind of accurate. Like that it is sort of tropey and sort of like a collage. A draft is written by him, and then they brought in a professional screenwriter who created the full length cinematic script. And then a Los Angeles based company, Hydra Entertainment, assisted with the script, in addition to writing assistance from other Hollywood writers. So
that probably messed it up, honestly.
Yeah.
to be completely honest, it's like, because there's a bunch of people who's like, oh, well, we gotta figure out this, like probably tried to Hollywood it too much, but it ended up being this kind of soupy mess of like, it's not as anime or as video gamey as it should be.
Yeah.
But it's also not traditional Hollywood storytelling. It's this weird sort of murky midpoint that doesn't really satisfy anyone.
And on the casting point too, like I like all these actors. I think they're like great actors. I just am too aware of what Aaron Paul looks like. So to hear his voice coming out of this guy's face, who is a different actor, is like weird. Is kind of weird.
Well, it's one of those things because the animation pipeline is so labor intensive and takes so long that you can imagine that this whole thing was packaged when, you know, Game of Thrones and Breaking Bad were at the apex of their relevance.
Yes.
And I don't know what year that would have been, but ultimately comes out in 2016, which certainly feels later than, I mean, I feel like both those shows were off the air by that point, right?
Yeah.
Is Game of Thrones just wrapping up? I could be wrong.
No. 2016? Game of Thrones.
No, Game of Thrones went until 2020.
2019.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, so that went a while. Okay.
Yeah, Breaking Bad ended in 2013.
But you can see how this was like probably put together off of like these names of these big prestige TV shows, and then they're in there. But yes, they are so identifiable with those roles. That is a little bit of a thing. And so you're hearing two Game of Thrones characters talk about each other and to each other, and it just does throw you off a little bit. Yeah. I'm with you there.
Because like, it's that one thing too where like, I mean, not that they had to, if they're going to make the people look like people this much, they should just look like the people that are the voices, at least. But like, then it's a thing because we watched a dub probably, right? Like we watched, it probably was intended for the Japanese audience first. Who could say?
I would assume so.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know if this was because the lip sync was English.
Yeah.
Like it was not a dubbed lip sync.
Yeah.
And I feel like Aaron Paul, like I feel like maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like it's Aaron Paul is like the primary actor of Nyx. So if you watch the Japanese version, that's technically the dub.
Interesting. I see.
Maybe not. I don't know. I can't tell. I can't tell from the limited research I'm able to do while talking to you on this podcast.
Yeah, well, like it says that the likeness is based off of a French model, and then Neil Newbon does the motion capture, and then Aaron Paul does the voice. So it's just like this like Frankenstein process that is just like, what is like going on here actually? Just
is there any way to watch this in subtitled a subtitled version in the U.S.? Because I could only find it dubbed.
Yeah, I only saw the dub. I'm sure you could find the Japanese version, but I don't know if it's on any of the existing streaming platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So which is, I guess the answer to your question might just be no then.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what.
Maybe on the Blu-ray or something.
If you can, I'm not doing it. I watched it the one time. I'm not watching this again.
Wow. Meanwhile, I'm looking up Kingsglaive on Amazon to see if I can get it on Blu-ray.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
You know, to each their own. We're all doing our best. I don't think I did
detest this movie as much as Matt did. I just was like pretty lost, but I did like a lot of the mechanical design. I did like a lot of the character design, and I like the world building, like I said.
Yeah. It does not look like you can buy this film on Blu-ray.
Ah, dang.
Oh wait, no. Hold on, I'm wrong. 4K Ultra HD Kingsglaive is available on Blu-ray. 4,703 reviews, 4.5 stars. So people on Amazon
okay,
love
good
it.
Good disc.
It's well. In 4K. It is only in English.
Huh. That's a little bit of a bummer.
I'm shocked. Oh, well.
Well, there was something else they did that for. Where they were just like, you know what, this is a thing that we're intending for English speaking audiences because that's the biggest audience. I can't remember what the hell that was.
Wasn't it Final Fantasy 16?
Might have been. Might be what I'm thinking of. Yes. Yeah, I think that is what I honestly think that is exactly what I'm thinking of.
Actually, no, you can watch it in Japanese with English subtitles on the Blu-ray, but it is considered a dub. It is not.
Oh, so this was okay.
This is an English format film, and the Japanese language track is a dub. Huh.
Asked and answered. King Regis's son is Noctis.
Yes.
Am I supposed to piece that together for the movie?
Well, because did you not? Okay, hold on. Because you're like. You're like, I wish there'd been like an introduction that told me all the stuff. That's literally what happens. There's like a voiceover at the beginning, and it's like the kingdom of Lucius, the kingdom of Niflheim. These two countries are at war, and it's like voiced by the princess, and it's like the young prince Noctis, son of King Regis, was in Tenebrae to do some kind of like he'd just been injured, and you see Noctis in a wheelchair. Like that whole, it's just voiceover.
Yeah, I think I just tuned out at Niflheim. I was like, all right.
I know, I was like, did they say Niflheim?
Oh my God.
My favorite part was when King Regis yelled off camera to Gelman. And he was like, Gelman, should we go to break?
Gelman, I'm worried there's a coup going on. Take my ring of power.
Do you think this is the most Regis has been talked about on a podcast in the last like 5 years, probably?
I can say with certainty no, because I've listened to other podcasts to talk about Regis. God bless him.
A broadcasting
great, great
icon.
Entertainer.
Yeah.
Broadcasting legend.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
I guess the most shocking thing about this feeling I'm having right now is that I am enthusiastically happy about the movie, but still somehow on the opposite side of a take from you guys. Like, like I'm not grumpy and I'm not frowning and I'm not like, this fucking podcast is gonna fucking kill me. But didn't you like the cars and the shoes and the hairstyles? And
I
the
did
cool
like
world
that.
And I know I liked, you I did. That. I know. But like I'm like, oh, ah! And you guys are like, this sucks.
So you're feeling this way, and this is the first time I felt like you. We Freaky Friday'd.
Yeah, we did, especially since it's a Tetsuro Nomura thing. Because you normally are the guy who's like, Man, yeah. I don't know what the deal is with those guys in the hoods, those cloaked guys in, but I, you know, I like them and I want them like to, I want them to get hurt guy. By my boy Sora.
Maybe the I should organization just... 13 you're speaking of.
Yeah. See?
Regis's first television exposure was what? As Joey Bishop's sidekick. Joey Bishop of the Rat Pack had a TV show, and Regis was his sidekick. Isn't that crazy to think about? That life is that long?
Like,
that the
TV
host of
was
Who
new.
Wants to Be a Millionaire Wants to Be a Millionaire was one of the Rat Pack's buddies.
Such a great host for that show.
That's crazy. Yeah. I'll say this. I'll reiterate that this did make me want to play Final Fantasy 15. I do plan to do that at some point. I also will say I meant to do it in the past. I just never got around to it. I also feel like although this is intended as a prequel for Final Fantasy 15, the game, I feel like if I played that game and then watched this movie, I would have more appreciation for it because I'd just have a little bit more context for everything
yes.
instead of just this barrage of new ideas and new vocabulary.
Are the teleportation knives in the game?
Yes.
Good question.
The way
Very Prince of Persia.
So,
yes.
So the teleportation knives are a sort of weakened version of Noctis' main power. Which is that he, so all of the blades of the kings are like a power that he inherits. And I believe that he inherits that power by being, like, as soon as the king is dead, he inherits the power, like, you know, sort of as royalty. And the way you fight as Noctis is you throw those fucking swords at monsters and teleport to them. So the combat is also like throwing a sword up in the air and then throwing the sword back down at a monster's head from up in the sky.
Mm.
Like it's really kinetic combat. And I think some of the action in both Final Fantasy VII Remake and in Final Fantasy XVI owe... to that single concept of throwing the blade and then teleporting to it. Because what's the dude's name in 16?
Match it now.
Clive.
Clive. There it is. Clive does that move. Like he can teleport to different parts of combat, which is a Noctis move. I don't know.
Clive Rossfield.
Clive Rossfield.
Good name.
You're fine with it if the old time stuff doesn't mix with the new time stuff. I'm learning stuff about you, Apodaca. I'm learning.
I mean, I didn't dislike that. I was just like it was just confusing to me because I just wasn't sure because it's for the first like 10 minutes you don't see any of the new stuff and then they go outside and all the stuff's new and I was like, what the fuck is this? This is crazy.
But it's like that's an element I can just take at face value and not have explained to me, not have justified. Like there was a great war, and so some technology was lost, but other remain. Like I don't need that. Like that can just be baked into the world. I more just mean like, you know, what's going on between these characters and just defining things a little
like
bit better. But also, it's possible I'm just dumb and I didn't get this because I'm a dumb guy.
No, it was like that stuff was like the end of The Village to me, but like the first 10 minutes of this movie. Wait, what the fuck? What? I mean, I wish I liked it, but maybe it wouldn't be as fun to talk about, right? This didn't do it for me, but I do think that after I finish Rebirth, I probably will start Final Fantasy 15 because I want to see what those guys in the car are up to. That was
really
interesting.
That is a great tag.
Yeah,
it does make you just want to be in that car.
You get all that. You get their vibe.
Yeah,
the crew's vibe immediately, and you're like, I kind of want to hang out with these guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Gelman, the main guy in the car, that's my son.
And that's my final answer.
Okay. Any other thoughts on Kingsglaive?
This is the best movie I've ever seen.
Rochelle, you didn't watch this, did you?
No, I watched a trailer and I was like, I'm not going to understand this at all.
I wish I had done that. That probably would have helped me out a little bit.
Hey, it's time for the question block.
Ba-ding!
Alrighty, these are all from our Discord, discord.gg/getplayed. Here we go. This first one from Unagi Roll writes, if any restaurant in a video game were real, which one do you think would be your favorite?
Persona 5 Coffee Shop.
100%. With a bullet.
Yeah. I mean, that's an easy one for me. I'll try to think of a less obvious answer, but just that is so cozy. And we all talked it. We were texting about this back and forth. I'm sure we talked about it on our Persona 5 episode. And you know, I was continuing this as I played through all of Persona 5 Royal. It introduced me to having curry and coffee together.
That's right.
And that's such a great combo, and they offer it there. And it's just like, oh, man, that just makes me want to hang out there in the rain with some acid jazz playing.
That was like a really fun time because I remember there was
Cafe LeBlanc. That's what it's called.
Cafe LeBlanc. Yeah. There was a time during that where you just sent us a photo of you at a curry place.
Yeah.
And you were just like, I'm eating curry. Like, this rocks. I was like, you saw it in the game and then you went and got it. This rules.
Yeah, that's a really good answer.
I would like to eat at the restaurant, the bar from Dave the Diver. Get a beer and some sushi.
Yeah, some like fresh caught sushi.
Yeah. That'd be great.
That is actually awesome. That is great. And that'd also be a great environment because you're right by the ocean.
Yeah.
What was the can I hear the wording of the question so I don't like damn myself to hell? It's if you can eat in any restaurant from a video game, where would it be?
Which would be your favorite?
I'm going to go with Whirling in Rags.
Oh, wow.
That's a great answer. A
lot of drama there, though.
Yeah, a lot of drama. But like to be able to sit at the bar and like have a little bar food and like listen to these guys all talk to each other and see karaoke night, it'd be a good restaurant to hang out at.
I don't remember the name of the restaurant from Final Fantasy VII in the walled city.
Right. All I know is just when he's talking about the Midgar, like the plates that cover the city, and calls them that big pizza up there, like the Barrett line or whatever it is.
Okay, so I looked it up. The restaurant is called Restaurant. I like that one. I would like to try the restaurant from Final Fantasy VII.
I also talked to that guy. I also really like the Galdon Quay restaurant from Final Fantasy XV, which is a very French Polynesia inspired island restaurant.
I'm listening.
It's got, because of the mismanagement of assets in Final Fantasy XV, the food in Final Fantasy XV is still the best looking food in any video game ever made. So you'd be like, that food looks pretty great.
I tell you what, I always love a bar or restaurant you can hang out at in a game.
Yeah.
That's a fun thing. I mean, that's a big thing of what I liked about the Yakuza or the Like a Dragon series now is just like, and I can't think of a specific restaurant from there, but just that you could go and like, whatever, I'm just going to go have some teppanyaki or something. I'm just going to hang out for a bit. I'm just going to go get a fast food burger. I'm just going to sit in here. It's great.
I would also like to have coffee at Brewster's Cafe from Animal Crossing.
That's fun. Mm.
Thanks for the question, Unagi Roll. Great question. This next one is from Not Rock. If you were a pro wrestler, what game tune would you use for your entrance music?
Oh.
This is really interesting. I mean, Kenny Omega already has used One Winged Angel, so that and that's his finisher, so that kind of takes that off the table. I feel like he kind of owns that.
Yeah.
I'd want something big and bombastic, right? Like you'd want something that sort of like is shorthand for your character, but also tells you you're here to do business and gets the crowd all amped up.
Right.
I think mine would be Ryu's theme from Street Fighter II. Just like a classic game theme. But my first answer was the character select screen from Marvel versus Capcom 2, which is just gonna take you for a ride.
Oh yeah, that's really good too. That's really, really good. The first thing I thought of was Superman by Goldfinger from Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1. It's kind of a cheat because it's just like a regular song. But that was the first thing that came to mind.
I think I would probably take one of the versions right now, just because it's what's in my head and it's what I've been playing and it's from my favorite game. I think I just take Down by the River from Baldur's Gate 3.
Oh, wow.
And one of the most, like, you know, maybe not the character selection version, but there's so many different orchestrations of that, some instrumental, some with vocal throughout the game. So just like whatever the biggest, boldest, like fucking burr, 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 burr,
burr. Oh yeah,
just fucking like, here I fucking am.
Okay, my new answer is Nick doing that.
Also, I feel like I accidentally said Ryu's theme. I meant Guile's theme. Sure. Is like, okay, the classic Street Fighter 2 theme.
Oh yeah. yes,
goes with anything.
This next one is from Cassette Indexed, and I was tagged in this.
Okay.
So, Matt Apodaca, now that you're all about Final Fantasy 16 and Baldur's Gate 3, how do you feel about once proclaiming that space is better than old?
Wow.
Seems like you're a bit of a flip-flopper. Many games combine space and old. Final Fantasy has done this for ages. Phantasy Star as well. What do you think is a good ratio for space and old? 50-50? Or do you tend to favor one over the other? Now, look. Am I a bit of a flip-flopper? Absolutely.
John Kerry ass.
I'm fucking John Kerry up in here.
Okay.
Nick's wearing flip-flops right now.
That's true.
Wait, was there a modifier there, or are you just saying yes?
That I am. I absolutely am.
I thought there was going to be but.
You know, I have completely changed my mind in a way that I think is going to maybe rock some world.
Okay.
I no longer care about space.
This is insane. You are a flip-flopper.
I don't care about it at all. I haven't thought about space in forever.
Wow.
You're going to get into like No Man's Sky in like a month and be like, I love space.
I mean, if I do, I'll do it. But right now, I'm saying old is better than space.
Wow.
I've reversed my stance completely. Because at least with old, there's at least stuff for me to do.
Yeah.
Space, there's nothing for me up there.
This is the you know what? I think part of your current stance might be reinforced by the relative success of these other RPGs, the aforementioned RPGs, versus Starfield, which kind of came with a whimper.
Yeah.
And the problem with space is that it kind of can seem sort of vast and empty and formless.
Yeah. Now, so interesting point, it keeps coming up. Dune is space, but
also old.
It has old.
Feels a little old. Feels
like sand?
Yeah.
Sand is shorthand for old. Sand was once rock.
Yeah, and also some of the clearly some of the technology that's going on in that movie. It's like stuff that it feels like a step backward has been taken from where we are now, but I mean that's also part of Frank Herbert's lore.
They don't have phones.
Yeah, they don't have computers. They got Mentats.
Yeah. They got that freaking box you put your hand in.
Yeah, keep me away from that thing. Rochelle Ranch, where do you stand on old? Yeah, we learned your nickname Ranch last week. Where do you stand on old versus space?
I've been trying to figure out what the context of space and old is. And
so old is sort of like whatever you think is old.
Uh-huh.
And then space is like...
Space.
Space.
It would be like science fiction versus fantasy.
Yeah.
Or versus like, Western. You know, a Western.
Oh, in terms of video games or just vibe?
I think
vibe.
It's just vibes,
it's
right?
Just,
I mean, this is your thing. I don't want to mischaracterize it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think old.
Wow, and your team old.
Old is where it's at right now. And all the cool young people like me and Rochelle are saying that it's old is good now.
I've been saying, first off, I love hearing old is good now. I think I've been kind of a space guy my whole life.
Yeah.
But I don't really think about them as opposing each other. I also love old. I've always loved old, you know, but I think I probably leaned more into science fiction.
You know,
general.
I'm actually detecting the exact point where it changed for me.
Yeah.
Was when the movie Old came out. That was sort of like I saw my own shadow that day, you know? And I was like, oh, maybe I like old, because I really, really liked old, movie. I loved it.
So this questioner tried to kind of call you out, trying to put you on notice, and you're basically defying this question and rejecting the premise of the question and saying that, yes, you do. In fact, you are a flip flopper. You do like old better than space. And that's OK. You can do that.
And this is how I will dodge every controversy going forward. I will just say, like, yes, I did do that. And basically, so what?
Wow, Matt is president.
No collusion. Thank you for the question, Cassette Index. And sorry that I changed my mind.
Can I say something I realized about myself in the conversation we've had just now?
Please.
Which is that I like old and I like space. I like them very much. But in talking about Kingsglaive and in thinking about Final Fantasy VII, I think my favorite is sort of sideways from both of those, which is old combined with space.
That's cool.
I really like the swords and the cars in Kingsglaive, and I really like swords and Midgar in Final Fantasy VII. I think my favorite aesthetic might be old and space together.
I know he's like a monster, but like one of the things that worked really about Firefly, the show Firefly, was that it was old and space, and that that was just fun.
Yeah, and also there's just something about like kind of the sideways, like it's like adjacent to, because I think there's something of Final Fantasy 15, at least what we saw from Kingsglaive, that's kind of like adjacent to reality in a way.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like something like Highlander, where it's like, yes, this is reality, but also there are immortal beings and they wield swords and they try to behead each other because there can only be one, you know?
Yeah.
That one's not as expansive in terms of how the world is altered, but it's the same sort of science fiction or fantasy concepts existing within our, it's low fantasy, I think some people would call it.
Yeah.
It's also, I think, why I love the show that we're covering in our sister podcast, Get Animated.
Yeah.
Which Solo Leveling is dudes in hoodies carrying swords, raiding dungeons, and then having to pay their taxes. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, that rock. That show rocks.
That's a great, great point, Heather. And finally, this last one is from Gorilla Acropolis.
Great name.
Great name.
Gorilla Acropolis writes, you can choose any vehicle from any video game to use for personal transportation. What would it be? I thought about this. My first thought was the Rocket League car.
Wow, that's a big car.
Big car, but also can go upside down and like fall around and stuff.
Really safe. Yeah, it would be safe.
Really, really safe.
Any vehicle from any game.
Can I grab a star from Kirby?
Yeah.
Just sort of fly wherever the fuck I want.
I would say like it's a vehicle, but you can use it for personal transportation. Like that's a vehicle within that game. So that's allowed.
That's like physical fast travel. I could just grab that star and it's just going to whisk me away to where I want to go.
Just into the corner of the screen. Kirby's so cute. That's a really good one. A Mario Kart would be fun to drive, but it's like kind of normal.
Yeah.
Is a horse a vehicle?
Yeah, but like, you can't do what you do with them.
Well, I was like,
ride them off cliffs.
Okay, I'm gonna pick the high-end luxury car from Cyberpunk.
Ooh.
Because that you spend a lot of time on the interior of that car in certain, like when you're in certain cutscenes and stuff, and it just looks so plush. It just looks fancy as shit. I've never been in a space that fancy, and the idea of it being like dropped off at my house, and then that's my car, and it probably has a lot of auto driving features, so I could just be like, yeah, take me to the grocery store, and it would be like right away. Perhaps you would like to get some gasoline along the way.
I'd like to drive a gummy ship from Kingdom Hearts just to see if it's as alarming as it seems.
I'd ride a chocobo why I asked if a horse was a vehicle.
Right.
Yeah. The chocobo riding is fun so far. I like it feels good.
Yeah. I also might return back to Persona 5 and just say a functional rail system would be kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Stopping that thing and you see some silhouettes and you get to where you want. You don't have to wait too long for your train.
You wouldn't be concerned that the entire rest of the world was silhouettes and that you're the only human man there?
No, and then I could walk through them? No, I'd be all right with that. No clip. It's save me some time. Also, like, not for day-to-day use, but it would be the Normandy in Mass Effect is awesome. It's just, like, rad yes. to have this big-ass spaceship that you can just, like, hang out in, and that just all your crew is there. Like, anytime you have, like, a big ship that's also, like, a base of operations, I really like that in a game.
I know yeah. I just said, too, that, like, there's nothing up there for me, but if there was, like, a thing where I could go to, like, a big spaceship for, like, a weekend, I would do it.
Yeah, of course you would.
I just want to hang out in a spaceship, see what's going on. But that's it for the question.
They push you out the airlock for talking about old so much.
That's what you get for talking about old. M. Night Shyamalan tries to save me. He's up there, too. He's like, leave him alone! That's it for the question block, everybody. Thanks for writing in. And if you want to write in, that's discord.gg/getplayed. And thanks a lot, guys.
That's this week's Get Played. Our producer is Rochelle Chen, a.k.a. Ranch, yard__sard. Our music is by Ben Prunty, brenpruntymusic.com. Our art is by Duck Brigade Design, duckbrigade.com. Check out our paywall show, Get Animated. Matt Heather mentioned it, but we're watching Solo Leveling.
That's right, Solo Leveling episodes 1 and 2 on the Patreon this week. Get on board.
So this is the beginning of the Solo Leveling miniseries
That's
we're
right,
starting.
Dog.
So yeah, if you want to get up on an awesome new show that we're all enjoying that is video game adjacent, check out Solo Leveling. We're all hyped about it. We're all enjoying it.
We're
and that's
so
it's been a lot of fun to talk
about it.
It fucking
and
rips.
Unlike Kingsglaive, we're all hyped together. And that's fun.
Yes.
Yes.
That's its own energy. You can find that Get Animated along with our entire pre-HeadGum back catalog of Get Played episodes and How Did This Get Played episodes only at patreon.com/getplayed.
And you know what? I think I got played this week. And it does not feel good. And I'm going to think about doing this to people going forward.
Glad you learned your lesson, but yes, you 100% got played.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.